Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth in the first Wednesday of 2022. Where does the time go? That's a great question. Where does all the time go? So no co-host tonight. I'm here by myself. This time, Michael is not feeling well. He has a bronchial problem, no COVID, thank the Lord. But he's just not in kind of shape that he should be coming at. So I get to do the show again by myself, but I got my faithful companion, Chris Klaproth, our producer, and he'll make sure that your calls get to me. But do me a favor and call in and ask questions and keep me company tonight. I'd appreciate that. But also, maybe I can do you a favor and answer a question for you. That would be proved to be something that is beneficial to you. You say, gosh, if he could help me answer this question, it would be really beneficial. So if you want to call in, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in, help me out, have some fun, answer questions for you. Maybe it could prove to be extremely beneficial to you. And also, as we always say, there's probably people out there that just aren't going to call into a call radio show and hope that you would call in and ask a question that they'd like to hear anyway. So a lot of times when you ask that question, it's something that somebody else wants to hear at the same time. So if you want to call in and get the conversation rolling in a direction that's important to you, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680 is the way to call in and ask that question. But as you do, I'll just talk about things that I think are important. The first thing, of course, today the market was down a lot, and that starts the wheels turning. People start trembling that they're going to lose a lot of money. And remember, you never lose money unless it is a permanent impairment. The only way it becomes a permanent impairment is either you sell because the market's going down and you never buy back in and it goes much higher, or the market goes down and never, ever, 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 ever recovers. So, it's much easier to do the first one. You panic and sell and you never buy back in before the market goes higher. And like last year was a great example of that. The market went down in a period of I think it was a total of like 28 or 29, 30 days at the most, and went down 35%, and then came roaring back and never looked back again until, you had a couple down days during 2021. But you should expect a bad market. You should expect that markets don't go up forever straight up, and you cannot predict when they're going to stop going up, and you can never predict when they're going to stop going down, and you're not going to sell at the top, and you're not going to buy at the bottom, and there are plenty of people who try to tell you that they can do that for you. But in my experience, since 1979, I've heard all the people have made these claims, and they were flash in the pans that seemed to be right for a year, maybe two at the most, and then never got it right again since then. And you give me time, I could come up with at least 20 names of people who were considered gurus that would tell you when the market's topping and when the market's bottoming. And they've all disappeared. And they're new ones now. And the one whoever was saying in the last month that the markets are going down, and if they do, they'll be the guru for the next 6 months to a year. Anyway, 410-922-6680. Chris, let's go right to Dave in Halethorpe about Roth IRAs.
Hi, this is Dave.
Dave, how you doing?
All right. Hey, first of all, I want to tell you I appreciate your show. I think you do such a good service to the listening audience.
Well, I appreciate that, Dave. And you're talking about one of my favorite topics is Roth IRA, because not enough people have Roth IRAs.
Okay. I'm looking at the 401k.
Okay.
I have a 401k through work that I've been putting in as the traditional side.
Okay.
Of it.
That's the pre-tax side, okay,
correct.
Which is the traditional, the way it used to be. But beginning 2007, you can have a Roth 401k, which, let's just explain that to our listeners. So in a traditional, you put in $10,000, you get to say, hey, I made $50,000 because I put $10,000 into my traditional 401k. I can say on my tax return, I only made $40,000. But in the future, if my 10 grows to 20 and I take it out, I have to pay taxes on the full 20. In the Roth, it's exactly opposite. I make $50,000, I put $10,000 into my Roth, I don't get any deduction on my tax return. But if my 10 grows to 20, in the future, if I take it out, it's 100% tax-free. All right, we've got the bases laid out. Now let's go to your question. Which is better for you?
Well, I remember, I try to listen to your show, but I don't always catch it. And you had mentioned about that you would you were going to do the math to prove it to someone.
Sure.
I've not done it on air.
Well, I've not done it on, you know, I actually forgot all about that. Thank you for reminding me. The Roth is always going to prove to be the better option, except for in those unique situations where you have a tax bomb waiting for you if you don't get your income down a little bit. And the typical place that tax bombs come into play are between the incomes of $100,000 and $200,000. So if your household income is between $100,000 and $200,000, you got a high probability you may want to stay in the pre-tax option, okay? But it's hard to say unless we see each and every situation. But I'll try to do that before the end of this show. Is, you know, maybe during the break I'll do the calculation and show you exactly why it works so well. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Because I figured for this coming year I was thinking about switching to the Roth that is an option in my 401k.
What's your total household income?
With everything, it's probably before any deductions, probably in the upper 90s.
Yeah. So somebody like that is almost a gimme, you know, do Roth, especially if you have children, because now you're getting tax credits and all kinds of stuff that's making your taxable income relatively low. So if you take pre-tax money now and into the future, you carry that pre-tax money into the future when you're not in a very high tax bracket today, you're going to hurt yourself in the long run. All right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
I'll do that when I come back. Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to take that pause, Chris, and any other callers want to get online before we get back, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. And we'll be right back. Money, riches, and wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. And so here's the situation, okay? So, Doug let me just get my thing back here.
It was Dave and Halthorpe.
Dave in Halethorpe asked me the question. I had that D name there, Chris. And we're going to go to John in a second, but I got to do my math here for him. Okay, so let's say that you're going to put $10,000 into your 401k plan. Now, if you did it pre-tax, you can only afford $10,000 of cash every year. And it doesn't matter if it's $1,000, $5,000, or $10,000. It's irrelevant. And I'm using 10, okay? So $10,000, that's the most you can afford to do, all right? But in a Roth, since it's after tax, $10,000 is $10,000. But in pre-tax, I could put in $15,000. If I'm in a 30% tax bracket, I could put in $15,000. And the net impact on my paycheck every year is $10,000 after tax. Okay, you see the situation there. Now, the $15,000 grows to $30,000. And the $10,000 doubles to $20,000 in the Roth. So now the $20,000 is tax-free in the Roth, but the $30,000 that my $15,000 grew to in the pre-tax account is still taxable. I'm in the 30% tax bracket. I pay $10,000 in tax on it. I'm end up with a net $20,000 in tax. Same thing as the Roth, okay? Now, the issue is if I'm in the same tax bracket or lower, you know, if I'm in a lower tax bracket, the pre-tax would have worked out to my benefit. So let's say when I actually go to retire, I'm no longer in a 30% bracket, I'm only in a 20% bracket. The pre-tax is going to give you more money because I'm in a lower tax bracket, all right? If I'm in the same tax bracket or higher, then you want the Roth. Why do you want the Roth? Well, because the math was the same on the pre-tax, but the Roth is now tax-free and not going to impact your future tax returns when you take it out, because remember, every dollar of extra income you show on that tax return could impact your medical expense deductions, your Social Security taxation, your Maryland state deduction, your IRMA limits of Medicare, et cetera, et cetera. Every tax you take out of a pre-tax account could impact all those things also. So I want to be doing Roth. Now you say 30% tax bracket, Drew, that's really high. Well, you know, Dave in Halethorpe said he made, you know, net taxable income of about $80,000, $90,000. That is the 30% bracket if he lives in Maryland, because it's 8% state and 22% federal is where he was. That is a 30% tax bracket. Now, if Dave says, hey, I absolutely assure you, I guarantee you, I am moving to a tax-free state in retirement. He wants to be doing pre-tax, but not many people can make that absolute guarantee statement in the future. Because, you know, there's no assurance that in the future you're going to be in that tax-free situation. Now, in Maryland, you may only make $60,000, $70,000 in retirement, and it might be Social Security plus the money you take out of a 401k, and that could prove to be relatively tax-free to Maryland, but I wouldn't guarantee it, and you know, Maryland is the least generous of states. There are a lot of other states that have a lot more generous benefits than Maryland does. And, you know, some of their rules for their retirement exclusion are ridiculous. You know, why they don't just give you that if you take money out of a retirement plan, you get a retirement exclusion up to X dollars, like a lot of other states do. But Maryland totally, I mean, they just slap. They slap the residents in the face because they know they're not going to respond. They're not going to worry about it. They're just going to live with it no matter what the rules say. And they did that to them when the 2018 tax law went into effect. And the standard deduction went up so high that you couldn't itemize easily on the federal return. And Maryland says, hey, if you don't itemize on the federal return, you're not itemizing on our Maryland return. And it has seriously impaired a lot of Maryland taxpayers. And Maryland picked up a giant windfall and said, to you, Maryland residents, you're too stupid to respond and get mad at us. So we're just going to do it to you. And boom. But you know what? Maryland residents are saying, hey, I've had enough of this. I did it. I said, I've had enough of this. I'm leaving for good. And that's my goal and objective, is to always be gone and not be a Maryland resident anymore. Anyway, I could do other math problems on this Roth versus pre-tax, you know, and we're going to come out with very similar scenarios in the Roth, and the Roth will always win, especially if you're in the same bracket or higher. The Roth is always going to win. The bracket you're in at the time you contribute, the bracket you're in the future when you take the money out. Anyway, I've got to go and go to John in Owings Mills. John, how can we help you?
Okay, I have some savings bonds, double E and double H. They are actually were made out, paid for by my mother, made out to her, and I'm POD on the savings bonds itself.
Okay.
Now, the bonds have matured like 5 years ago. She bought them back in the mid-80s, so they matured like 2016. So there's been no interest coming in since then. And the question, I have a bunch of questions about how to handle these. First of all, where can I cash them, and do I need my mother's death certificate? Because I'm POD.
You're definitely going to need your mother's death certificate. There's no doubt about that. And you should be able to cash them at any FDIC bank, especially if you have accounts there.
Okay. Now, how about there's going to be tax due, right?
They're going to be, the interest that's accumulated on those bonds are all going to be due and payable when they're cashed in. And you'll get a 1099 INT for that.
Okay, 1099 INT. Now, am I gonna like a penalty because
no.
I haven't paid any tax and it's
no, no. I mean, you know, technically, you should have paid tax on the bonds when they matured. Technically, but that, as far as I've seen, I've never seen the IRS go after that. So as long as you cash them in and report the taxable income, I think they see it as a win-win. We didn't pay you any interest. You're punishing yourself. Why should we double punish you, you know? So
gotcha.
Cash them in, pay the taxes. Go ahead. One more.
Is there any way I can transfer these to, I have a child who's
no.
At the moment, no income. And,
no, no.
And no way to do that?
No way to do that. Not that I know of. Maybe somebody else knows. I have not figured one out, you know? Because if they're in your name, once you transfer them, it's taxable to you.
Ah, if I... Yeah, I'm POD, as I say. And
right, but, you know, the only thing... And it's too late to disclaim the bonds because it's been too long a time since you... If your mother had just died, you know, 2 months ago, I could have said, hey, you know, John, you could disclaim those bonds and go to the next one down on your mother's will, et cetera, et cetera. So, but no, no way to do it now, my friend. All right?
All righty. Thank you very much.
All right. We're going to Joe in Bel Air. Joe.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, what's up?
Well, I just, I got a little bit of money sitting aside, and I'm doing a Roth IRA. I'm doing a retirement, and I'm pretty much real stable with all of my finances, but I'm just trying to figure out if you had, like, say, $80,000 as a way to, you know, stop losing your money with inflation, where would be the best place to put it between maybe gold, silver, or dirt?
Well, first off, gold, silver, dirt, and cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, and so forth is a bunch of malarkey that they're inflation hedges. Anybody who tells you that doesn't know what they're talking about, okay? All those currents, all those commodities and so forth are strictly a creature of supply and demand, okay? If you have a oversupply, I don't care what inflation is doing, gold is going to go down in value. If you have an extra demand, even if you're in a deflationary period. Matter of fact, gold over the last 10 years, we were in one of the lowest inflationary periods over the last 10 years, and gold had a tremendous run, right? But during 1980 and 2000, we averaged about 4% inflation, and gold went down 65%. You know, so anybody who tells you that gold, silver, Bitcoin or inflation hedges, I don't necessarily know that they're talking correctly. You always have to wonder about supply and demand when you're dealing with those types of assets. Okay, so you're going to have to give me a pause before I answer the rest of that question, and then we'll go to Gary in Medicaid. But if you want to hold on, I'll answer it, or you can just listen after we come back, and I'll tell you what I think is the inflation hedge of for investing. All right.
Yes, sir. I'll sit here and listen.
All right. Well, we're going to go to another pause. And if you want to get online, 410-922-6680. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're on an open show. We've got John, and I still have to answer his question. But I just did want to say for Dave earlier on the Roth IRA, which is better, you can also go to our website, financialconsulate.com, and the Consulate Journal. And remember, that's consulate, like an embassy, C-O-N-S-U-L-A-T-E. The Consulate Journal, there's numerous articles I've written on there about Roths and why Roths are important, but it's important to get Roths wisely and strategically, and understanding when to do the Roth and when not to do the Roth, and when to do Roth conversions and when not to do Roth conversions. So there's another good tool for you to see some of the math on those things, and when to do them, when not to do them. There are too many people out there that either just don't do Roths at all, or they just randomly say you should always do Roth, and that's not 100% true. Anyway, Joe and Bel Air, your investment question was about inflation. Now, let's take the understanding of inflation. What is inflation? Inflation is the cost of goods and services going higher because there's more money chasing those goods and services that there's a supply of, okay? So if that is the definition of inflation, which I believe it should be a pretty good dang definition of inflation, if that's the definition of inflation, there's only one thing that could possibly compete and keep your money protected during inflationary periods of time. And the answer to that question would be stocks, and only stocks, not bonds, but stocks. And you always say, well, wait a minute now. If inflation goes higher and interest rates go higher, then stocks will correct and the PE ratio of stocks will come down, and therefore they will no longer be the inflation hedge. They'll go through a wicked bear market. And the answer to that is it's a good statement, but you have to think about it that ultimately companies will make more money. And ultimately, even though those PE ratios might be lower, that inflation will drive those prices up higher. And those prices will ultimately reflect significantly higher prices in those stocks because they are the companies that are pricing in all those inflationary forces. Now, some companies won't be able to benefit from the inflationary forces, and those are the companies you want to avoid. I would expect a company like GM would probably have a hard time, you know, because they just don't have the pricing power. But many companies do have pricing power, and they'll be able to easily push those prices through. And so it would have to be the companies that have pricing power. And, you know, most index companies, index funds are going to be companies with that kind of pricing power. The companies that don't have pricing power will ultimately fall out of the indexes. Companies that have pricing power will move up and up in those indexes and become bigger and bigger shares of that. And so history has proven that the stock market is the only investment that has the actual true ability to outpace inflation over time, because they are the companies that actually are raising the prices for their goods and services. So anyway, with that, we'll go to our next caller, Gary. But I'll just say in a second, we have an open show tonight, 410-922-6680. After Gary, I don't think I have anybody else online. So give us a call, 410-922-6680. And we're going to go to Gary in Columbia. Gary.
Hey, Drew, I enjoy your show.
Thank you. What can we do?
I have two friends who are married.
Okay.
both about 75.
Okay.
They own their own house, and they have some modest liquid assets.
Okay.
He is in memory care.
Okay.
Now, they're projecting they have enough right now for about 2 years of memory care.
Well, they're making a serious mistake.
Okay.
Because they need to be with an elder care attorney as soon as possible. See, here's the rules, Gary. If my wife and I were in a situation like them, where one of us is going into memory care and my assets were moderate, okay, here's the rules. Listen, you can keep a house with the whole equity in it, okay? So let's say I owned a $400,000 house with no mortgage, okay? I get to keep that house. The government says you get to keep it, Drew, or Bev, whichever one's in the is not in the memory unit. You get to keep that. You get to keep a car, even if the car is a Mercedes sports car worth $100,000. I get to keep that car as long as you know as I own the car. I get to keep one car. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And lastly, I get to keep $125,000 of assets or 50% of assets, whichever is lesser. Okay, so let's say I have 200,000 of assets, then 50% of that would be 100,000. So that's less than 125. Now, when I say 125, I'm giving you a general number where that is. It might be a little more now. It might be 140, something in that ballpark. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say they have about 200,000 of assets. So they're able to keep 100 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would happen is, you go to an elder care attorney like Kevin Bress of Pessin and Katz or Kim Battaglia of that same firm. That would be a great firm to talk to. Pessin and Katz, they're some of the best elder care attorneys around. Or the firm of Frank and Frank, Candace Scher, one of the best elder care people around. And you go to them and say, here's my situation, okay? And what they'll do is they will work with your assets and they will keep the community spouse, the healthy spouse's assets protected from Medicaid as best as possible by law, and the other one will have all their bills paid by Medicaid. And the fee is going to be about $5,000 to $10,000, but compared to paying $120,000 a year and draining all the assets out over the next year or two, I think it's a bargain.
Okay, I didn't quite get that. You said 125K or 50% of assets, whichever is less.
Correct.
So if they spend down to $100,000, then they can only keep $50,000. Is that what you're saying? Or
no. If they have $300,000 of assets, they have to spend down to $125,000. But I'm only giving you a tiny bit of the story.
Right.
Okay, so let's say that $200,000 of the assets are in my IRA and $100,000 are in my spouse's IRA.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to do is we're going to take all of my IRA assets and we're going to annuitize them and create income out of them.
Okay.
And that income will pay out over 3, maybe 5 years at the most. So in essence, I'm going to go and I'm going to tell the Medicaid people that my IRA, my assets are zero because they're no longer assets, they're income. And now that they're income, they don't count as assets. And then we're going to tell them that my wife, who's in the memory care unit, is $100,000 of assets. So now I only have to spend down $50,000. I spend down the $50,000. Part of that is paying for the elder care attorney, $5,000 to $10,000,
mm-hmm.
And the rest of it, I may be able to actually charge them. Let's say I had a $50,000 mortgage, I could just take $40,000 out of her assets and pay the mortgage off, and now boom, I'm immediately qualified. And then once you get qualified, I can reaccumulate the assets that I have in my name. Okay, I could even hit the lottery. You ready for this, Gary? I could hit the lottery after Medicaid approves my spouse.
Mm-hmm.
I could hit the lottery Powerball for $600 million
mm-hmm.
and not have to pay a nickel for the care of my spouse who's been approved for Medicaid.
Is that if you annuitize the Powerball?
No. Once he's approved on his assets and my assets, okay. Once he's approved, my income and my assets are never considered again.
Yeah, okay. All right, interesting.
Let me tell you something. It's very simple. The simple answer is your friends need to be talking to Kevin Bress or Kim Battaglia of Pessin and Katz or Candace Scherr of Frank and Frank as soon as possible, the healthy spouse of those two, as soon as possible, and it'll be the best money they've ever spent.
Okay.
All right?
All right, Drew. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Gary. You take care.
All right, bye.
Anyway, we're on an open show tonight. I don't get, Chris, do I have anybody else online?
No, sir, you don't.
So I'm doing a much more boring job than some of these people have told me. Anyway, we're on an open show. I've got one more segment to go. I'd love to talk with you, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. We'll be right back. Money, riches, and wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the financial consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBS.
See, Chris said, you know, you weren't even listening to the last two songs I played, so I'm going to butter you up right now and play your favorite Red Rubber Ball. Anyway, we got to go, Chris, and we're going to go to Nick in Perry Hall. Nick, how can we help you?
Hey, Drew, thanks for taking the call. I also love the show. I'd say, you know, I work in the industry, and you are by far the smartest individual I've ever listened to across such a broad range of financial topics. So,
well, I appreciate that, Nick. That's very kind of you to say that.
Just out of curiosity, I was wondering if with your clients, if you guys had a flagship portfolio, how you guys did in 2021, like relative to the S&P 500. And then just secondly, how do you feel about ESG investments or these socially impact investments? If you know, that's something that you're using with your clients.
Well, yeah, I don't. Let's do the socially, socially whatever you want to call it, investing. You know, there was a time that I was, really fascinated by the concept, I had a situation at one time, and this was back in the 80s, actually, believe it or not. And I had a situation where I wanted to buy De Beers. And I had a great client. His name was Howard. And Howard was an African-American gentleman and just the greatest guy. I mean, I just love this guy. And I thought, you know, I'm gonna insult Howard because this is right in the middle of apartheid and so forth. And I called him up and I said, Howard, I'm looking at De Beers and I'm looking at buying it. And I didn't want to do anything that would be offensive to you. Would you feel if I bought De Beers? And he said, well, Drew, is it a good stock? And I said, well, you know, it's trading for $4 a share, but just the diamonds they own alone are worth $8 or more a share. And, but you know, people are just selling it, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, you know what, Drew? He says, I bet you I could do a lot more good with the money you make me on that stock than I could by just not buying it in protest to that company. So you go ahead, feel free to buy it. And you know what? It went to $8.50 a share and we sold it. And, and he was happy as a clam. And, you know, it taught me a really important lesson that, you know, everybody has their opinions of what socially responsible investing is. And, you know, whose opinion is right? You know, what is socially responsible? I don't typically invest in oil. I don't typically invest in gambling or tobacco because I think they're bad industries. Any industry that government's against us, I don't want to be on. But, you know, if they gave me some of those companies at a ridiculous price compared to what I know that I could potentially get out of them if there was a takeover, a liquidation or something like that, I might be tempted to buy them despite what they do. So that's my answer to socially responsible investing. I understand we think out very carefully anything we own. The answer to how we did against the S&P in 2021, the answer is we're so diversified amongst large cap, small cap, international, and so forth. When the S&P tends to be the big king of the stage, we will typically underperform the S&P 500. I can't give specific numbers because we are not GIPS compliant. We don't do that. But most all the investments we have their own return, you know, that a client could get, and we give them their specific rate of return for their specific account. But the talk in general, I'm not allowed to do, but I will tell you clearly, we underperformed the S&P 500, which did 25% last year, because international and small cap and a couple other indexes didn't do nearly that well. So that's the answer to your question.
I appreciate that. Sorry for putting you on the spot. I know it's based on...
No. But, you know, in the year before, we tended to perform better than the S&P 500, 2019, but, you know, or 2020, I mean. But that's, just a uniqueness about what happened that year. But we tend to stay very diversified. I got to run, Nick. Good question. I got to go to Charlie in Pikesville. Charlie, how can I help you?
Hello.
Yeah, Charlie, go ahead.
I caught the tail end of the gentleman that called in about the Roth and the 401k question.
Okay.
So I have about 18 more years yet left to work. I contribute about 7% of my pay between a 401 and a Roth. So I contribute more to the 401 than the Roth. But
you mean you contribute more to the traditional pre-tax than the Roth after-tax?
Correct, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
So it's actually about three times more than my...
What's your general family income?
So right around $240 a year.
$240 a year. And you don't own a business or anything, right?
Nope.
Okay. Well, in my opinion, you should be doing Roth unless you're absolutely confident that you're going to move to a tax-free state in the future.
Yes, that was my other... I'm definitely moving out of state when I retired.
But the question is a tax-free state.
Yeah, well, yeah, I was thinking of, you know, South.
Well, only Florida is the only one. Florida and Tennessee are the only two on the East Coast that are
correct.
Tax-free in the warmer states, and not that Tennessee's much warmer, but it has warmer pockets. New Hampshire is the only other East Coast state that's tax-free.
Yeah, well, I want warmer weather.
Okay, then Florida would be your only choice if you're going tax-free. If you just go to South Carolina or Georgia, you'll pay less tax, but you're not going to be tax-free necessarily.
Okay, now I also get a pension when I retire.
Okay.
So how does that, like, you're saying that the Roth is still the better way to go?
Yeah, you know, again... The key in your situation is going to be what are your real plans and how long is it going to take to get there? And are you really going to do it? You know, if you want to make that bet, then what I would do is 50-50 Roth and pre-tax, because you'll still have plenty of pre-tax money you'll be able to convert in a lower tax state. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
But, you know, I would expect Maryland to make a move in the future where they're going to start taxing your contributions to the 401ks, because it's just what these northern states do. So,
yes.
Anyway, right now I would be doing 50-50 if you think you're going to move to a tax-free state in the future, but 18 years is a long time. Things can change, you know?
Yep.
All right, buddy? Roth, yep, you know, you need Roth. Okay, I got to go to Cindy in Upper Falls. Cindy, how can we help you?
Hi. I was listening to your other caller with the elder care concerns, but that was like from a spouse's point of view.
Right.
I'm now taking care of my mother-in-law, and she had two sons, my husband and her other son. And if she were to go into assisted living or into a nursing home, we're hearing from other people that once her assets or money would be expended, then we would have to continue paying her care.
Not true.
Not sure
not true.
How that works.
Not true. The answer to that question is, in Maryland, they did away with filial support. So you're in Maryland, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So they did away with filial support about 5 years ago, which means that you're not responsible for it. Unless you want her to go to a place that's not Medicaid eligible. So if you want her to go to a place that's not Medicaid eligible, then yes, you will have to pay for it. But you need to talk to a good elder care attorney now. Well before your mother-in-law ever runs out of money. How much do you think she has left? 100, 200, 500?
Oh, she's probably upwards closer to, I'd say at least $1 million, because she's got stocks, bonds, a house, a car.
Well, then she probably will never run out of money. But even then, you should probably just consider talking to an elder care attorney. Because if her situation is such that she could be in there a long, long time, you might use a lot of money and be good to start protecting some of it now. All right?
All right. Well, thank you.
All right. You take care. And I'm out of time, but Kim, you hold on and you call the office tomorrow and I'll answer your question, okay? Anyway, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless and have a great 2022.